like to begin by reading a poem. The poem is by R.D. Lang, who is a psychiatrist, whose most famous book, I think, is perhaps The Divide Itself, maybe The Politics of the Family. He's president of an organization in London known as the Philadelphia Association, which tries to set up households or small communities for mentally disturbed people, extremely disturbed people, and allow them to live in these small communities without any other form of treatment. Lang's position is that much of what we traditionally have called psychotherapy is not really helpful. At any rate, he wrote a poem which I thought implied some of the questions that we might want to consider tonight. It's called, "Do You Love Me?" She. She. "Do you love me?" He. "Yes, I love you." She. "Best of all?" He. "Yes, best of all." She. "More than the whole world?" He. "Yes, more than the whole world." She. "Do you like me?" He. "Yes, I like you." She. "Do you like being near me?" He. "Yes, I like being near you." She. "Do you like to look at me?" He. "Yes, I like to look at you." She. "Do you think I'm stupid?" He. "No, I don't think you're stupid." She. "Do you think I'm attractive?" He. "Yes, I think you're attractive." She. "Do I bore you?" He. "No, you don't bore me." She. "Do you like my eyebrows?" He. "Yes, I like your eyebrows." She. "Very much?" He. "Very much." She. "Which one do you like the most?" He. "If I say one, the other will be jealous." She. "You have to say." He. "They are both exquisite." She. "Honest?" He. "Honest." She. "Have I got nice eyelashes?" He. "Yes, nice, nice eyelashes." She. "Do you like to smell me?" He. "Yes, I like to smell you." She. "Do you like my perfume?" "Yes, I like your perfume." She. "Do you think I've got good taste?" He. "Yes, I think you have good taste." She. "Do you think I'm talented?" He. "Yes, I think you're talented." She. "You don't think I'm lazy?" "No, I don't think you're lazy." She. "Do you like to touch me?" He. "Yes, I like to touch you." She. "Do you think I'm funny?" He. "Only in a nice way." She. "Are you laughing at me?" He. "No, I'm not laughing at you." She. "Do you really love me?" He. "Yes, I really love you." She. "Say, I love you." He. "I love you." She. "Do you want to hug me?" He. "Yes, I want to hug you and cuddle you and bill and coo with you." She. "Is it all right?" He. "Yes, it's all right." "Swear you'll never leave me?" He. "I swear I'll never leave you. Cross my heart and hope to die if I tell a lie." Pause. She. "Do you really love me?" Okay, the idea for this evening is that it is an open forum. And that means that it's open to all of you, and I hope that, every one of you that would like to say something will have a chance. I'll try to coordinate the discussion. I'll try perhaps to draw you out a bit if what you say doesn't seem entirely clear to me. I will try to keep us a little bit on the track if I think we're getting off, but mainly the agenda is yours, and I hope that you'll feel free to go in directions that seem significant. I thought that we ought to consider several kinds of questions, and we ought to recognize a couple of assumptions. The first of the assumptions, at least that I'm making, is that we all know something about loneliness. We all know something about loneliness because we know people who are lonely, or at least we believe they're lonely, and we understand them as lonely people, perhaps in slightly different ways than we understand other people whom we don't think are lonely. I also presume that we all know something about loneliness because we've tasted it ourselves, that all of us, no matter how happy and social and involved and busy and so on we are, from time to time feel lonely, maybe desperately lonely, so we all have first-hand experience with it. So I'm suggesting then that loneliness is something that we can all talk about because I'm presuming that we've all experienced it in ourselves, and I'm presuming that all of us have met other people whom we believe to be lonely. So we have two entirely different kinds of knowledge: subjective knowledge, inward knowledge, and a kind of objective knowledge, that is, at least looking at another who is not ourselves and viewing that person differently and making a judgment, namely that person is lonely. I think we all use the word loneliness freely, when we talk about loneliness, when we talk about someone and say that person is lonely, or if we admit that we're lonely, that we often don't define the term. It's just a term that we're very comfortable with and talk easily about. A second presumption that I'm making is that somehow, at some level, all of us feel that there's something a little bit wrong with being lonely. That in being lonely, there's a kind of failure. One oughtn't be lonely. If you're feeling terribly lonely, you're apt to say to yourself, I've got to snap out of this. I shouldn't do it. I'm responsible for changing my attitude, or getting out of this mood, or getting involved, and so on and so forth. And although we may be quite sympathetic to other persons, if somebody is perpetually lonely, we at one time or another will at least entertain the idea that person really ought to do something about their own loneliness. They can't just go on this way. It's their responsibility, after all, to, you know, change things. So that we have, it seems to me, at least these are presumptions that I'm operating with, and you're free to challenge them, and I hope that if you find them dubious, you will. But my presumption is that we have a kind of ambivalent attitude toward loneliness. On the one hand, it's something that we see as being really part and parcel of the human condition. We've tasted it ourselves, and we see it in our friends, and we see it in lots of people. And on the other hand, we tend to be critical of it. We have an attitude which says that oughtn't be, that somehow if I am lonely, in some sense I'm failing. So there's this kind of ambivalent attitude toward it. Okay, so there are three presumptions. One, we all know something about loneliness. Two, we use the term very easily. And three, we have this kind of ambivalent attitude toward it. Now, with these assumptions in mind, it seemed to me it might be useful to take up several fairly broad questions, and I just want to state them now and then throw it open, and in keeping with this notion of an open forum, let you people take it wherever you want. But I wonder if it wouldn't be helpful if we were, one, to try to define loneliness a little bit more precisely, or to describe it, perhaps, at least in some sense, try to say what loneliness is. Try to be specific, try to be concrete, try to nail it down in some way. Two, I think that we ought to ask the question of what we think gives rise to loneliness. Does loneliness happen more often in certain kinds of social situations than in others? Is it socially induced? Or does loneliness happen with certain kinds of people, Norwegians, for example, more easily than others? Why loneliness? And then, thirdly, I think that we ought to try to get around to the question about whether or not loneliness is something that we ought to just accept as part of the human condition, or whether there is any justification in, well, hoping that we can do away with loneliness in our own lives or in the lives of our friends. In other words, perhaps try to decide on what side of this, what I take to be an ambivalence about loneliness, we come down on. Okay? What is loneliness? I think we talk about it a lot very easily, but I'm not sure that we really know what it is. Where does it come from? And then, is it something that we can reasonably hope to live without, or is it inevitably part of the human condition? Okay? Now, I don't think we need to take the questions up in order, but if we can kind of keep those questions in mind and talk about it, I'll try to help us focus a little bit. Okay, what do you think loneliness is? Anybody?
I think it might be a condition where there is barriers that are placed between you and other people. And it could be physical barriers or mental barriers. Or for some reason or other, you're not coming across to other people. You're not having a contact.
Okay, in other words, you're saying that loneliness really is, in some sense, being alone. Do you think that the barrier is typically or more frequently a kind of physical barrier? I live by myself.
I think that can help.
You know, is a Holden guard up here? Is that sort of person more apt to be lonely than the person who lives in the midst of Chicago or Seattle or New York? I mean, is what I'm asking is loneliness ordinarily or more frequently associated with isolation, actual social isolation?
I said there are many types of barriers, mental things. Could be just you are putting barriers around yourself to prevent other people from the street. You could be not trying to go off to find friends, and that would still be a barrier. But it would be a mental barrier instead of a physical barrier. But I think either one is still probably true. It might be, like you said, it might be more common to be the second.
Loneliness can often occur in the midst of a great crowd of people where you all of a sudden feel that you just don't belong. Here you are surrounded. And there's almost a barrier around of some kind.
Okay, now, and you said you feel you don't belong. You feel you don't belong. I mean, there's a difference between being actually isolated and feeling that you don't belong. Yeah, Jay.
Loneliness to me is having no one to share joy with.
No one to share joy with.
Yes. Like, well, you may just be walking along a path and you see a beautiful flower, and it'd be nice to touch somebody and say, "Hey, isn't that beautiful?"
All right, but now let's imagine a situation where you're walking along the path. You're with a number of people, and there's a beautiful flower, and you point it out, people say, "Gee, that is beautiful." Couldn't you still be lonely? You know, in fact, maybe very lonely or more lonely in that kind of situation.
Perhaps.
I mean, what I'm wondering is, in a situation like that, doesn't the feeling of not belonging sometimes become most clear? You know, you really share something, and then all of a sudden, for some reason, you feel that it was inappropriate, or that what you shared, the gift that you gave, wasn't accepted. Right?
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah. Anybody? Have any thoughts about that?
Do you define it as alienation?
alienation.
Yeah, I'm back here.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But
would you want to elaborate alienation?
The idea of barriers calls up the idea of feeling alienated, which is not necessarily something that comes out of me. These two people have been sounding like what you said in the beginning, that we put the responsibility for loneliness on ourselves, as if somehow we had put up the barriers around ourselves, and it isn't always that way with alienation. It can be others alienate us, situations alienate us.
Rejected, you mean?
Kept outside for some reason.
Maybe not rejected, but maybe not accepted.
What would the difference be?
Well, either way you feel empty, I don't know. It's an emptiness. I think sometimes a lonely person is maybe void of being able to communicate to another living person, or even to a spiritual
spiritualness. Mm-hmm. You suggested sharing joy,
yes.
and I tried to wonder whether or not sharing joy wasn't something like giving a gift and not having the gift apparently received, or received but not appreciated. And you're talking about communicating. By communicating, you don't mean simply being able to talk.
I think it's being understood. You have feelings inside, and what you want to do is convey the feelings, whether they're important, you know, an important feeling to someone, and if it's not being understood the way you feel it, I think you have a lonely feeling.
When I'm lonely, it's like experience gets really slippery. I need to share that experience through joy or sorrow with another person, or else the experience is less real. It hasn't really snagged. For me, it hasn't stayed in my life, and I need to talk about it or to share it in some sense, to confer upon it a sense of reality. So I feel...
Is loneliness always slippery. Sad?
No, sometimes like, I can offer this slipperiness to not communicate, to not convey the reality if I don't want it to stay.
Sometimes I experience loneliness as a yearning for something that's not there.
Like what?
I could think of yearning for a place that I feel really good at.
Mm-hmm.
It's a yearning. Coming from like my belly, and I key into the emptiness too there. It's wanting something that's not there here and now, and kind of not knowing how to get it.
feeling incomplete without it.
At that point in time, yeah, it could be something that is real special, and real. Has been a real close moment to me that I'm yearning for that feeling again.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a yearning for a person to share that particular thing.
So that what you're yearning for is a set of circumstances or a person where you feel that you would be more capable of expressing or communicating or sharing, somehow giving of yourself, and having it come back to you in a way that would be gratifying. Is that taking up the theme that several of you have suggested?
Seems like kind of the synopsis of this might be said that loneliness is a desire to see a change in a relationship with another individual, but it's loneliness. It's a personal dissatisfaction with the state of being that's connected with something else.
A personal dissatisfaction with state of being in yourself? Do you mean?
In relationship to something else.
How is that different from, say, frustration or... You know, I mean, supposing I'm trying to play a certain piece on the piano, and I'm just really dissatisfied with my ability to do it. That feeling isn't loneliness, is it? Well, what kind of self-dissatisfaction do you have in mind? Or, you're not sure.
Pick it down.
Yeah.
Excuse me, Harold.
Yeah.
Three people are just left with real regret because, and they're not people they couldn't hear.
Oh, okay. I'll try to speak up, and I wish everybody would then try to speak up.
I think another kind of loneliness up here is sometimes there are things that you can't share with anyone else. There are things that you have to experience on your own, or I guess the fact that they can't be shared, whether they're misunderstood, or there are just reasons that they can't be. And that is one of the most lonely feelings, knowing that there's something that you have to bear by yourself.
Okay, now I was wondering recently whether or not somebody like Albert Einstein was lonely because he was in possession of a certain very complex theoretical notion, which was just so difficult to convey, or nobody else had the intellectual capability for a while to understand it, you see, no matter how much he tried, it simply couldn't be shared. Now, would that be an instance of loneliness? Would we...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I think you're saying no.
Saying no, I think that would be frustration.
Uh huh.
To me, loneliness is not being first with anyone.
Not being first. Could you elaborate that? I think I like that idea.
Well, as you go through life, what you said about cooking, people slip past each other, and there are very few contacts, real contacts. Made. If you have someone that's in your making number of contacts, you're first with them and you know that they're there, you know they speak your language, they will understand you. If they don't, they will accept it. And there is always a touchstone or a cornerstone or some place to go. Mentally or physically, so you're not alone.
Okay, now I think that you're suggesting one reason why people are often critical of loneliness. I mean, imagine now a situation where two people are very happily married and very close, and one of these people has bouts of loneliness. Wouldn't it follow from what you've suggested that that person simply ought not to be lonely?
I don't think loneliness is really that bad by itself.
But I mean, if this person has someone else that's first, as you put it,
yeah,
and they're very close and they understand each other about some things, and they're free to say that they don't understand when they don't,
okay.
Mrs. Einstein, perhaps, you know, I don't know, in fact, but... I mean, what I'm asking is, in a situation like that, would you expect loneliness to arise?
Occasionally.
Uh-huh.
Harold, I think it could, because lots of people are speaking of loneliness in respect to another person.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't always have to be in relation to another person. Somehow, I'm trying to mull it over in my mind, but somehow, loneliness to me is some lack of well-being inside, or maybe a spiritual well-being, or something along that line.
Yeah, I think that's what Tim was suggesting before, too. Could either of you sharpen that, or somebody else try to sharpen up this idea?
Sometimes I feel lonely for myself, because I'm not functioning at my best level. Is that the kind of feeling? I mean, and I miss who I am when I'm not, you know.
Out of touch with yourself?
Yeah.
Self-alienation?
That can be.
I look at it in terms of, I guess, understanding it. Someone else said that before, too. When I think feelings of loneliness for me come when I have something that I want to share, whether it be joyful or sorrowful, and I can't share them for a number of reasons. Sometimes that I might not be able to share them with someone else, or I might not be able to even really share them with myself because I can't make them understood. I can't say it in order to make it understood. The other person isn't capable of understanding, the other person doesn't even want to understand, or I don't understand what I'm feeling myself. And for me, that's lonely, is not being able to understand the self. Maybe that's more what Joyce was saying, is that I'm out of touch.
I'm interested in the idea of experiences that are too slippery. Could you elaborate that a bit more?
Well, like an example would be when my grandpa died, I intensely needed to share that experience or the feelings I was having, because they almost seemed to overpower me by their quality of just free flowing. And for me to gain power over them, in a sense, to give them a kind of a reality. They were just coming on, and they didn't seem to have shape, meaning, a nature. So I needed to share my grief or the things I was feeling, and not necessarily on a verbal level. But I needed to do that so that they became manageable or real. At the same time, another person might opt not to share those things. And I'm not sure. Maybe those things are. Well, I know that I remember my grandfather's death vividly. It has a sense of realness because the experiences were shared, and through conversation, conversations are remembered, images are evoked by the sharing of the grief. It's not just a vague feeling of having lost something, but I have concrete memories now because there was a sharing going on. The experience has become more real. And were I alone in that grief, I think that I would just have vague feelings instead of real memories.
Okay, now I think that what several of you are suggesting then is that the impulse to share, the impulse to the need to communicate, which when it is frustrated leads to loneliness, that impulse is really an attempt to somehow concretize experience, make it real, make it something that's not just fleeting through your own consciousness in some way, but is there and can be talked about or looked at or vividly recalled or something like that. You're talking about understanding yourself in situations. Is that concretizing experiences?
Yeah.
You're talking about things slipping away and needing to share a grief in order that it becomes something. Do we need other people to do that, do you think? Always? Do we need other people close at hand? Do we need to be surrounded by people in order to avoid loneliness? How much social interchange does one need in order to be able to make their experience something that they can really grasp and understand and put in perspective? Yeah?
I want to go back to talking about a personal frame of mind that invokes loneliness.
Uh-huh.
If you're all by yourself and you haven't seen anybody for 20 years and you're being chased by a bear, you're not lonely. You have to be in a certain state to experience loneliness. And I think there's a real strong personal element involved where certain people would be terribly lonely in a situation where another person would not experience the feeling of loneliness whatsoever. So I think it's really important, the individual personal element that's involved. And I agree with what Tim was saying, what somebody else said about
that was the question in part that I was really meaning to raise. For example, last year or sometime on the CBS Nightly News or Walter Cronkite's News, Charles Kuralt, this man that is always going around, was in Alaska, and he had been dropped in by a helicopter to a snowfield where there was a priest who was living there utterly alone for a period of some 6 months. And Kuralt said, "Aren't you terribly lonely?" And the man said, "No, that's one thing I am not, is lonely." And I think that there's a sense in which we can clearly understand that he probably wasn't. And then I think we've all known people living in very close situations, living in dormitories, living at Holden Village, or living in places where they're constantly involved with people, but perhaps in a very superficial way, but at least always in some sort of social setting, who are desperately lonely. Now,
in yourself, then, isn't it?
Well, I don't know. I mean, what do you think?
I think so. I think it's within yourself, really. And it isn't always an unhappiness. I've felt exhilaration in a lonely situation.
Uh-huh. Can you give an example of that?
Yes. I took a hike once by myself and got up to where I saw a beautiful view, and it was a beautiful feeling to think that at the moment this was all mine. I was the one that was looking at that.
But then you were really alone, but were you lonely?
I wasn't lonely, just alone, I guess is what it was. But it was more significant at that time than if somebody has been with me. So it was with many. Other times I would want to share and would be very lonely because I couldn't.
There's an ancient saying that thinking is the activity that you do when you're most alone and least lonely. You're most alone and least lonely. That is, most into yourself, most somehow understanding, things are most meaningful, concrete, vivid, alive, something, but that somehow this is only possible when you're kind of apart from other people. You're least lonely when you're alone. Pascal said most of the problems of modern man derived from his inability to sit alone by himself in a room.
I think of a person I met once who always would explain being alone as I was with myself instead of I was by myself. And that's interesting. Two different perspectives.
What do you think that person meant?
That he enjoyed being alone and he wasn't lonely. I don't know exactly.
People seem to vary a lot. Some people seem to be perfectly content to live in surrounded by other people all the time. And other people seem to have a great need to get off by themselves at times. Mm-hmm. It's a difference in personality, don't you think?
Mm-hmm. What I hear, and I was with myself, is that that person had a communion or a communication within himself. That was going on.
Mm-hmm. This kind of understanding that we've been talking about.
Harold, you asked earlier, perhaps some people got lonely easier than other people, like the Norwegians, or and I just think that not necessarily as a generality that could be true, but my parents being all Swedish, somehow think that they can, in many ways, think that they can make it on their own. They don't like to share their a lot of things, like they're going to Finland next month, and the neighbors won't know until they're gone. And that's a joy to them, that they're not the real communicative sharing type. And I think that comes back to them, especially my mother sometimes, in loneliness, because your people don't know, and she'd like them to know really, but she will not tell them. And then maybe later that could cause loneliness, and yet she chooses it. I don't know if that goes back to the old, we're from Scandinavia, we can do it on our own. And if they have a trouble, they don't share it either. It's just them between them.
It could be a cultural thing, couldn't it? Because some of your cultures are real open and all hugging one another and that type of thing. Now, I grew up in a German community, and they're self-reliant like that, too. And you don't share feelings, basically, it's just you kind of...
Sure, possible to feel awfully lonely under those circumstances, though.
Yes, it is.
You might be kind of a self-reliant person, but you're hugging yourself and you're just terribly, terribly lonely. I think it would be just a terrible oversimplification, but to me, loneliness is just defined as an inability to communicate when I really want to.
Mm-hmm.
And that inability may come from within me, and it may come from some forces entirely outside of me, but it's just my inability to communicate.
Would it be fair to make the assumption that, say, during a time of loss and grief, the person who is tight-lipped and restrained is more lonely than the person who's weeping and wailing and gnashing teeth and beating breasts and telling the story to everybody?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Would we all agree with that? Would anyone have any questions about that?
That idea of communicating takes time. Maybe that's something that our society puts on us. If loneliness is the most outstanding malady of American society today, maybe part of the reason is that we do not know people very well. Most of us are quite superficial, and we move a lot, and we change our lifestyles a lot, and anything we don't care for, we can simply leave. We don't really have deep enough relationships with people to always be able to be brave enough to take the risk to try that communicating of the slippery things that are hard to put into words and to share. And maybe there's a fear. I wonder how much fear is involved in loneliness. The fear of reaching out and not perhaps being understood.
Okay, now I think you've interpreted a phenomenon that we observe and raised a couple of questions. So you're suggesting that maybe the restraints that are seen frequently are really a manifestation of a kind of very transient society and the fear that maybe I cannot rely on somebody because I simply don't know enough of their history and so on.
Well, just the image we always have from TV and the media of the beautiful people, well-adjusted, their mother died in the soap opera, but there's never any woolies under the bed, there's never any dishes on the drain board. Everything goes along beautifully no matter what the circumstances are. There's instant communication amongst all people, and somehow we get that through stories and television, and the highlighting glimpses we get into other people's lives as they spin off things that have happened to them, and then they turn and we never see them again. And it somehow makes us feel that we ought to be able to do that. We ought to be able to cope with everything, and then we stumble around and we are not able to. And maybe we tentatively reach out sometimes, and everybody moves so much, a lot of us actually can take those risks often, because a lot of times we find ourselves in this situation so often.
Okay, a lot of people have made this sort of argument that urban, industrial, modern society with all of its of complexities and so on makes the development of close and enduring friendships difficult, and therefore there's a lot of loneliness. And this seems to be the interpretation you're suggesting. Is that right? Or
I think so. No. And maybe just the noise level and the activity level too. We cannot give one another very much time either. And we have to talk over the pipe music besides.
Now, I think that you were disagreeing with the general consensus here that this kind of restraint was always a sign of loneliness. Or do you have some question about that at least?
I was thinking that the people that show emotion a great deal perhaps may not be any less lonely than the ones that do not. I think it's more of a mood or feeling of isolation or solitude regardless of circumstances. That we all inevitably have.
Gerald, I think
it can be alleviated, but
I think to me sort of loneliness sort of means some kind of security. Because like
you say loneliness is security?
No,
loneliness or lack of security.
Okay, relates to security.
Oh, okay. Okay, go ahead.
If you have it or if you don't have it.
Yeah.
Like when I'm alone, I don't have to, you know, I can just be me, I can, because I don't, you know, I'm accepted by myself or whatever, you know. And then like say I'm at a place where there's a lot of people, and if I don't think anybody there will accept me for just being me, then I'll be really lonely. But if there's one person in 500 that I think, you know, accepts me for whatever I, you know, for me, for whatever I do, or that I'm not lonely, you know, even if I can't communicate with them that much, if they are just, you know, even a partial friend, and they accept me as a friend or whatever, for being me, then I'm pretty secure.
Or that they share something that is dear to yourself. I mean, you're able to share yourself with somebody else, then you're saying you don't feel lonely.
Yeah, well, sort of that, and then also not having to... I feel like even if one person is there, then I don't have to put on any kind of show and act like everybody. You know, I can just be myself more. And I feel very comfortable. I can just be myself instead of having to, you know, act up for all these other people because I don't know what they are like.
Are you suggesting then in part that some of the easy outward expression of emotions, happiness and sadness and so on, is really a sign of a kind of social insecurity and possibly of loneliness?
I don't know, I think I'm really insecure. I'm happy, you know, usually happy, I'm not lonely if somebody's, like, you know, if somebody's around, you know, or if I'm just there.
Are you saying that loneliness has something to do with our expectations of how people are going to respond to us, or how I'm
going to
respond to myself in this
relationship? I think to others are responding.
Like if I expect these people to be accepting and they aren't, then that leaves me lonely. Or if I expect them to understand me and they don't for any number of reasons, then that leaves me lonely.
It's for. I guess if I feel somebody will accept me, you know, for whatever I do for someone, I'm not.
Well, let me see if I can caricature what you're saying, and I mean this as a caricature, but perhaps we'll illustrate it. Supposing you're next week moving to Boston, and let's suppose that you grew up in Kentucky, and in Kentucky you have lots of friends, and really feel quite at ease and are able to share yourself and so on, but you get to Boston, and you're invited over to the apartment, the people across the hall or something, first night, and you go in your blue jeans and bare feet and grass between your teeth and so on, and say, hi, and this is what you always did in Kentucky, and it worked fine, and they say, oh. Then you feel lonely.
Okay, well, I always tend to go places. Like, I've gone to, I went to school, I didn't know anybody there, and I went to this high school, and I didn't know anybody here. I just sort of, I got to get to know somebody quick, or else I'm going to be, okay, I'm lonely until, like, I walk in there, and at first I'll be sort of lonely, yeah, because I won't feel accepted at all. But if someone comes up and talks to me, and you just sort of get a feeling that they accept you, then even if everybody doesn't, it'll be okay. You know, I'll change after a while, but still I won't feel as bad as if I wasn't accepted at all.
Yeah, okay, so there's another element then, which is that you have to want to be accepted, huh?
Yeah, I suppose.
I mean, if you weren't worried about that, then that you stood out and were different and were not accepted, that wouldn't lead to loneliness.
I don't care if I stick out or, if I'm totally different from the entire crowd, just as somebody accepts me.
Mm-hmm.
So, maybe even just one person, I'm fine.
Mm-hmm. But it's not the experience of being pointed out as the oddball, or perhaps rejected in some sense, which is equivalent to loneliness. Kind of example, I don't know if this is a good one or not. I worked for a couple of years as a social caseworker in New York, and some of my clients were in a section of Brooklyn known as Red Hook, and in order to get the Red Hook, you took the subway to the end of the line and then took a bus, and then you had to take another bus, and they were just really isolated there, I think more or less by design. I mean, they didn't want these people coming into Manhattan and shopping and so on, so it was really a different world. And I was visiting clients there, and it was winter time, and I was the only white face, anywhere there. And two, I had a kind of absurd stocking cap that my mother-in-law had knit for me that I was wearing. And I got onto a bus and sat down, and then several local people got on, and they just looked at me, in a way. Now, I felt really, scrutinized. I felt really objectified. I felt really, in some sense, absolutely alienated from these other people on the bus. They had categorized me, made me into a thing. They had all sorts of ideas about what I would and wouldn't do and how I was going to act and heavens knows what else. But that experience of alienation and objectification was not the same as feeling lonely, because it never entered my head that I would be one of them. I never thought that I was going to be part of that little society.
Yeah, I was going to say that's more feeling conspicuous, not feeling lonely.
Well, it wasn't simply feeling conspicuous, although I mean, the fact that I was indeed conspicuous is what gave rise to it.
Well, I think that in feeling very happy or very sad or something, you can feel lonely or not. also with a lot of people or without a lot of people, there's a lot of these things that where you can feel lonely with or without some of these kinds of emotions. But I think, to me anyway, what someone said over there about the loss of a grandfather or something, that's where I maybe experiencing some kind of loss and either not being able to communicate or express sympathy for that loss. It's kind of an empty moment feeling.
Isn't it also possible, though, in several people have suggested that they feel lonely at the time that they are also experiencing great joy? I mean, there's something that they have that has made them so utterly happy that they want to concretize it and they want to share it in order to do that. I mean, is that what you meant when you said, you know, loneliness can happen both at times of happiness and sadness?
We're more in terms of alone rather than lonely. I'm not sure I heard a good example of loneliness with utter happiness. Although I think you could have that. I'd like to say that loneliness is not connected with joy and happiness.
That this is independent of it. It can happen with either joy or happiness, or maybe even somewhere in between.
But I don't think I've heard it. I would connect it more with some other kind of emotion.
Well, imagine yourself listening, or imagine me, if you will, listening to a really exciting performance of Bach, and just exuberant with it, and wanting to share that, and the person that you're with, you know, likes Led Zeppelin, and says, no. "Oh yeah, I wasn't paying too much attention to it. You know, you're just bursting with the joy of this. You know, it's on. Isn't that wonderful? Oh no, I wasn't really listening." Don't you feel lonely then?
Yeah.
And isn't that an example of loneliness associated with joy? I mean, it sort of takes a punch out of the joy, I guess.
Does it have something to do with expectations?
Yeah, I think so.
You were talking about going into Brooklyn. You didn't have any high expectations when you went there of contacts with people. You didn't expect them to react in any predictable way to you. But if you're operating as a group of people that you maybe have known for a long time and you have high expectations of how they're going to react to you, and that fails to happen, then you possibly could experience loneliness and everything. On a long basis.
Yeah, so then what happens? Don't we sometimes temper our expectations in order that we might not have the experience of loneliness? And then indeed, doesn't that lead to isolation? Isn't that indeed the kind of building of barriers that you were talking about, sort of? No. Is loneliness wrong?
I mean, no.
Ought we to try to do away with it? Yeah.
Well, I don't know really how to describe loneliness for myself, because it's something that seems to come and go when I least expect it in these kinds of times. But as I can look back over periods where I felt very lonely, it's almost as if it was a gift. It's a very strange kind of gift. But at the time, it either forced me to look more at myself or at thoughts and things, or I had an experience in a way that I had never expected, and in some way that forced me to grow or helped me to grow. Or it was just, it's kind of like, you know, some dark part of your life that makes the other thing stand out a little more brightly, the happy things, or it helps to maybe understand other people. It's hard for me to say what I mean, but I don't think loneliness is wrong. It's not always the most pleasant thing, but you know, as you can look back afterwards at certain things, at certain times of it, it was almost a good thing, or good things could come of it. So I think as I've been growing and experiencing different things, when I get periods like that, I just try to make the best of it that I can. If it's many times it's the joy experience I've been, I've known since I was a child, wanting to really share things and never being able to. And it was very frustrating, but lately I've been able to just take that joy and really love it, even if I'm by myself, and that seems to help. But I don't think it's wrong.
Try to imagine a world where there's no loneliness. So try to imagine what sort of people would live in a world where there was no loneliness. Do any images come to mind when you try to do that?
I can think of two. You know, it all depends on which way you go. You could go, if you eradicate something, if you eradicate loneliness, then you replace it with something else. And you could replace it with numbness or dullness. And I could imagine a world where people were just, when they were alone, were just numb to the situation. Or I can imagine it replaced with some other emotion, which could be joy or any of the other selected emotions you might want.
Do you think it would be genuinely, I was struck with your talking, numbness and dullness. When I think about a world where there's no loneliness, it seems to me that the people are going to be numbly dull in some way.
Why would they have to be dull? Why would it have to be numb? Well, couldn't it be paradise, such as, say, heaven? There's no loneliness. Why would they have to be dull? I don't understand.
I'm not sure I understand it either. Let me describe a little more what image I have, and then maybe you can free me of it. What I think about is, if any of you have read Nietzsche's Thus Spake Zarathustra, has anyone read that? I was astonished earlier this spring. I was in one of these big discount drugstores, and there it was on the rack, you know. Why? It's for sale. At any rate, there's something going on in this culture that I'm not, you know, I don't know about yet. They're selling Thus Spake Zarathustra in Hague drugstores in Davenport, Iowa. That's odd. Anyway, Zarathustra comes down from the mountain, and he wants to speak to the people. And the people are what Nietzsche calls the ultimate men, or the last men. And the last men have, they believe, invented happiness. They've invented happiness because they have complete security. They have no risks. Everything is going to work out the way they want, you see. He just describes them, you know. They have no chance of being lonely. They have no chance of being despairing. They have no chance of suffering. And he just says, you know, as Zarathustra speaks to them, they just sort of nod and blink. And a world without the possibility of loneliness creates the image, in my mind, of people that are sort of nodding and blinking, that they don't have mountains and valleys of experience. What do you think?
That sounds scary.
The world of the last man.
I don't think that has to be.
Yeah.
Why? Just because you're not lonely doesn't mean you can't have experience.
Uh-huh.
Can't learn and grow.
I think it's the same kind of contrast that you say. You can't really experience joy unless you've experienced sorrow to know the other half of it. So perhaps you wouldn't really recognize a moment of really great relationship with somebody else if you didn't at other times recognize loneliness of yourself. You need that.
Yeah, I mean, that's precisely what I was thinking.
I'd agree with that. You're talking about a very human sense where I think you were talking about, you know, the heavenly objective in our lives is to not be lonely. Perhaps we don't really want to accept loneliness. And I think for myself, certainly it's a nice feeling not to feel guilty for feeling lonely. I don't want to have to feel guilty that it's part of me. But at the same time, I want to grow, and I find myself growing out of being lonely. In other words, maybe part of it is accepting the fact that it's happening, and then the second part would be putting myself into a different situation. Once I've accepted that I'm having this emotion, then doing what I have to do to put myself into, it's like worrying. You know, worrying doesn't get you anywhere, and so once you find yourself that you're worrying, you do something about it, or you just stop thinking about it. Yes, I think that that's a very sad thing, but I think that if you accept it and stay there, you know, that would be a desperate feeling. And I think what maybe Jimmy was saying was that maybe, why should you have to accept loneliness? You know, I think it's better that we all have the hope of either through our spiritual awareness or, you know, intellectual awareness or whatever it be, that we have the ability to get ourselves out of that loneliness.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't think we need to accept loneliness and stay there, I guess is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. There's a certain personality type, I suppose, probably a adolescent personality type that seems to enjoy loneliness in a certain way. And, you know, I'm lonely, I want you to know that. Kind of self-pitying form of loneliness. But you're not suggesting, though, if I understood you, that the human condition would ever be one without some experiences of loneliness. But what you're saying is that loneliness is something that one comes out of, and that one doesn't have to expect to live in the valley. Or did I misunderstand you?
Who are you speaking to?
I'm trying to... Either one of you.
Do you want to handle that? I don't know if I exactly follow that. You're saying that you can be let out of that.
Yeah, what I'm wondering is when you say, you know, you're going to grow out of loneliness,
mm-hmm.
Do you mean that you're going to grow out of it so that when you're mature and well-adjusted and happy and so on, you'll never experience loneliness? Or do you mean that you'll be able to deal with loneliness in a way that does not allow it to disable you?
This is what I said in the second.
Yeah,
part.
The second, yeah. Any other thoughts about whether loneliness is good or bad? Or
Gerald, I keep on thinking back to something someone told me once. Now, there was some, I don't know if it was Synox or whoever, that said something about each of us has a, was created with a hole or an emptiness inside of us that keeps us searching for God, and that without that, that man would not search for a spiritual being to relate to. And sometimes when I'm feeling really lonely, I take real comfort in that. You know, because sometimes I really get into the thing where, you know, it is wrong to feel lonely, you know, if you're really, you know, managing things right, adjusting to your circumstances and stuff, you don't need to feel lonely, but maybe it's something that it's always going to be there until we become one with our Creator. Because he put it there so that it's certain for him.
May I add to that? You know, I would just feel that loneliness is, like he said, an emptiness and a cutoff from myself. And that I would feel that it's an I thing, not a they type of induced feeling, and that it doesn't matter if it's a happiness or sadness type of situation externally, but that it's an internal one, and part maybe of the human condition of the cycle of growing,
of feeling one's emptiness and then meeting that and going through it into fullness and then coming again into the cycle of the emptiness.
Well, she said over here that loneliness to her she used it as a learning experience. So that turned it into a good thing. But, you know, I can put my hand on that fire and learn from that not to do it again, too. That can be considered a good thing. Maybe your perfect world lacks what's lacking there is they don't experience loneliness. But I think you're also saying that they don't understand it. Why can't they understand loneliness without experiencing it?
Yeah, in Nietzsche's image here, I think that's right. They don't understand it. They've lost that capability.
And that's their problem.
Yeah.
Do you think you could understand loneliness if
you
never felt it, never experienced it?
I don't know.
What's the difference if you understand it or not? If it's something you just make up to deal with the situation, then what does it matter whether you understand it?
I guess I don't understand how you would just make it up to deal with the situation. Could you elaborate that a little bit?
Yeah, I guess there would be some kind of facts in any one of these situations that we talked about. And then those would be the external facts. There would be states of your mind. And you manipulate those to deal with the facts that you see out in front of you. And if you come to the state of that you call lonely, that's an attempt to deal with what you're seeing in a way that you've taught yourself, or it fits a pattern that you've previously learned. Now, how you understand that, I don't know.
So you're really thinking now of loneliness in behavioral terms.
Is there another context?
Well, I think that most of the descriptions of loneliness that we've heard this evening have not implied a specific behavior pattern or even a set of behavior patterns. I think that I'm glad that you've introduced this because it's been interesting to me that we've talked about loneliness in terms of it being an inward state which may or may not manifest itself in any behavior pattern. But you're suggesting that the only way we can really talk about loneliness is to talk about it as some kind of behavior pattern. Or disposition to behavior.
No.
And then it doesn't make any difference.
As a problem-solving technique used by an individual is what I'm suggesting. And the I'm not clear that we have a definition of loneliness that we could really agree on.
No, I don't think we've defined loneliness. I think we've pointed at different
things that we associate with loneliness. And for me, what came up for each case was a set of something happening and the person trying to deal with that, what was happening. And it seemed almost like loneliness was being used as a name, to name some phenomenon, and that then dealt with the problem. Instead of talking about problem and understanding the problem and saying, what are you going to do about it? I'm not sure I'm clear.
Yeah, but then in some sense, there is no such thing as loneliness. That's a rather sloppy way of talking about widely varying kinds of responses to specific situations.
I'm not sure that all ways of talking about loneliness would be sloppy. But what I get is that we've used it in a rather sloppy
mm-hmm.
way in the discussions that we've had. I don't have a better way, or I would have suggested that instead.
Yeah, well, I really do think that it's a word that we use awfully easily, and we're not sure what we are denoting by the word.
Right. I got a sense of a lot of problems having to do with incomplete relationships
mm-hmm.
that led to situations that we call loneliness, where there's a struggle to complete a relationship in all of the death types of things. That's a very difficult problem for us to deal with. And one way out of that is to call it loneliness. Mm-hmm. And there was another sign where the relationships don't seem to be established, and I couldn't put that into the same pattern of loneliness as the other. They seem not the same.
Your observation then is that many of the attempted descriptions of the state of loneliness fit the pattern of an attempted and failed relationship,
an incomplete
relationship, yeah, and that we're just calling that incompleteness loneliness, but that isn't a very useful sort of description because it's a catch-all category. I mean, is that a fair statement of your point?
I think that's
yeah. Any response to that? I mean, it's suggesting that perhaps it's a kind of cop-out, an intellectual cop-out maybe, to talk about loneliness as though it were really something, and that we need to try to understand relationships better in order to see what the specific failure or the specific incompleteness is, and then describe it in more precise terms.
I think that's the result anyway. Loneliness, I think, as we've been talking about, has been more of from the feeling point. That loneliness is a gut-level feeling that you have, and as was mentioned earlier, it's something you try and work out. And when you try and work it out, you would realize that it comes from an incomplete relationship or whatever it came from. You would work back to that point. So I think you end up at the same result, no matter what you call it. I think you would still get to that point.
Well, I thought that his point was that if we were more careful about trying, or more precise about understanding the nature of the failure, they wouldn't seem always to be the same. You see, that it's a kind of oversimplification. I mean, you see, if you were to look at a number of different objects, apples and oranges and tennis balls and so on, and you didn't look very carefully, you might say they're all the same kind of thing. But if you're more careful and more discriminating, you would see class differences. And then if you were even more careful, you'd see individual differences.
So you say there's classes of loneliness, or types of loneliness?
Or types of failed relationships, or types of incomplete relationships. And you know, I don't know, maybe we're on slippery slope here. Maybe we're going to get into a situation where we're going to say that every single kind of relationship is a discrete relationship with no common, you know. And if that were to happen, then I mean, and there's a whole tradition of thought, by the way, that says that when people sit around and talking about loneliness, that they're just plain muddle-headed, you know? And if they would sharpen up their thinking, they wouldn't talk about things like loneliness, and in effect, a lot of the unhappiness we have would go away because of that. You know? Position is called positivism.
These incomplete relationships, or I don't know the words you use, I don't recall. I've been sitting here really itching to say something, that's all I've been thinking of my own thoughts. But my wife and I were very lonely until we came here last Christmas and spent 10 days. And we didn't even know we were lonely. And I can't speak for her, she's not here, I'll speak for myself. I was lonely because I separated myself from Jesus and God, and because I was afraid to witness in a community that is not a Christian community. And I really felt afraid. I mean, I'm feeling a little bit right now. So. And when I stood up, I had to ask for a leave to come back here. And I had to write a letter to the Board of Education and give them reasons for it. And I gave them a whole bunch of baloney reasons why I wanted to leave.
And then at the night of the meeting, the whole, there were 500 people there, and the board all sitting up on the dais. And I decided, sitting in that chair, that I was going to witness for Christ that night. And they asked me, why you want to leave? Why do you want to leave? And I said, because I want to renew a friendship that I had lost track of. And that friendship was with Jesus. And it changed our whole year. I found that there were people in that community who at least respected that. And it just changed our whole life. I don't feel lonely anymore.
Ever?
I haven't for the last year.
And I think that, Bonnie was suggesting before something very much like what you were saying.
I felt alone at times, but I haven't felt lonely.
So
it's like at Vespers tonight, you know. I've given Jesus my burden and he accepted it.
And so, for your understanding then, that loneliness is a result of a broken spiritual relationship with Christ.
It was for me.
Okay. And for you, that's the source of all your loneliness?
I don't know about all. All I know is what has happened to me in the last year since last Christmas.
Okay.
And I don't feel alone here. And I kind of built fantasies in my mind that I was going to come here and stay here forever. But now I don't want to do that. I don't feel a need that I have to do that anymore. But I did come back for a year because I need tools. I need tools that I need to know how to spread this without... I just need to know how to spread it, and I don't know how yet.
I think kind of... Oh, go ahead.
I think,
what is your name?
Jack.
Jack. Thank you, Jack. You've given me courage to share. I do have experienced loneliness in my life, and I have a renewed relationship with God, Jesus Christ, Holy Spirit, that whole thing that happened for me. I'm not even sure if I'm sometime in the past few years. It's been an evolving thing. And my sense is that God is always calling me back to Him. And how I experience that often is when I'm out of relationship and I feel my theology is that being saint and sinner goes on all the time. I'm in and out of that. That's a flow in my life. And when I'm in the saint aspect of it, everything's really fantastic. And I'm in this relationship. I choose to be in relationship with God. And when I'm not consciously choosing that, I flip out. And that's the loneliness goes out of that. And
yeah, there were a couple of other. Yeah.
I just kind of, I suppose, with what we're talking about now, all this talking is reminding me of some of the things that C.S. Lewis writes about, which I find very true for myself. When you're very lonely, I experience it as a yearning type of thing, usually. And I can't say it as eloquently as he did or in the same words, but as I understand what he writes about, he's saying that, well, we're created for more than what we are here. We're more but just more to being here. And this yearning that we experience is kind of a yearning for what we're really supposed to be. And once you really get a communion with Christ, I think you're more fulfilled, and I think there's still a yearning towards it. I myself don't have that complete, and I know that's why I keep on yearning, but the one book that really sticks in my mind is The Pilgrim's Regress. I don't know if anyone's read it, but where he constantly had this yearning, and he tried almost everything in the world to be fulfilled, and he finds that it was right in the storm. It's been a while since I've read it, so I can't remember, but that's been coming into my mind tonight when we're talking about this. And for me, I guess that's, you might experience loneliness on different levels, you might even more superficial levels, probably with people, relationships, or other things, but deep down, I think that's the basic thing, is your relationship with whatever it is you're created to be, and when that will finally be fulfilled in that time. So, but people who can feel that that's fulfilled here in this life, I think it's beautiful.
I was just going to add on to what Jack said. I think there really is a risk involved in being afraid to share. And I know this last year, too, as I've built up my relationship with Christ, I feel sometimes that maybe I can't share how I'm feeling with another human being because they might not understand or they might laugh at me. But then you go into all the things that Christ lived through and you think, well, there is, you know, someone who does understand, and it's, to me, it makes me feel better.
I think loneliness is still, though, a lack of, I guess I'd like to call it meaningful or effective communication, because, and for some people, Christ or God can fulfill that need so that they don't experience loneliness. I don't think that it's fair to say that loneliness is the lack of Christ or God in a person's life. I think that's one means of alleviating loneliness. I think that's one kind of relationship. I think that gets back to the whole thing of relationships and loneliness, you know. I just think it's unfair to limit loneliness to a lack of a relationship with Christ. As a means of dealing with.
So you're suggesting then that what shall we call this? The experience of taking Jesus into our heart, the experience of grace, mm-hmm. something like this. In many cases may, if not eliminate, at least ameliorate loneliness. But you think that sort of, that somebody who is devout and for whom the experience of Christ is alive and vital, that person might also be lonely.
Yeah, I think it's possible for them to still be lonely.
That loneliness is not a sign of spiritual distance necessarily.
I feel like I have a very meaningful relationship with God and Jesus Christ, but I'm still lonely sometimes. Oftentimes when I'm lonely, when I'm by myself, I alleviate my loneliness by writing because it gets me in contact with my emotions. I'm communicating with myself meaningfully. And so I'm once again communicating meaningfully, and therefore I'm not lonely. Sometimes I'll pray, and that's another form of meaningful communication. And that would take away my loneliness. And I think that, like, when she was experiencing the emotion of her grandfather's death, she needed some meaningful communication either with a person or with herself to understand what she was feeling, because she didn't know if she was feeling guilt or grief or loss. And I think that for me, most of the time when I'm lonely and I consciously rid myself of loneliness, it's because I've been able to focus in on what I'm really feeling at the time.
Let me pause for just a second. to make the announcement that I always make at 10:30.